welcome to another episode of the Colorectal Quiz. I am Felipe Jaldus, Colorectal Research Fellow at Children's National Hospital, Washington, D.C. Today we are joined by Dr. Mark Levitt, Jason Fisher, and Paola Midrio to discuss perineal hypospadias and perineal fistula repairs. Make sure you download the Stay Current app to follow along with images and other related cases. Dr. Midrio comes to us from Treviso, Italy, where she is the chief of pediatric surgery in Padua.
Which, by the way, is the oldest medical school in all of Europe.
And this is quite an honor to have you with us today. So thanks for joining us and excited because it's a pretty interesting and difficult case. So should we get to it?
Yeah, let's get started.
This patient was initially diagnosed in utero as a female with hypertrophic external genitalia. However, after repeat imaging, the fetus was diagnosed as a male with hypospadias with a typical Tulip sign, which is a specific ultrasonic finding in severe hypospadias.
First, I want to ask a question about the prenatal diagnosis, because being told you're having a girl and then being told you're having a boy in the same sentence is a lot for a family. Is there any karyotyping or any other workup done to confirm this, to put the parents and the practitioners at ease of making sure the diagnosis was correct?
Actually, there was no karyotype. The interesting point for us pediatric surgeons is that up to 5-7 years ago, we were never called for such a counseling. And this is one of the aspects that we counseled more and more often, at a difference from the past when hypospadia prenatal diagnosis was not that common, but now is part of the routine prenatal care. So this is a different counseling for us, and it may be difficult because, as you said, you say to the parents, you have a boy with a hypospadia, that of course they do not know what it means. And you reassure them that a pediatric urologist are good all over the world, but there might be other associated malformations. And it is a very delicate counseling.
It's important not to overlook the emotional toll this may have taken on the family with the initial confusion. So what happened next?
He was born at term with strange-looking scrotum, which is actually a penoscrotal inversion. He did have a hypospadia in a severe form. And when we lived the scrotum, we also realized that he had a nanorectal malformation. But in a very few hours, he passed some meconium. So we went back and looked closer to the perineum. And by spreading his genitalia, we were able to localize two openings.
In order to determine where these openings led, a tube was placed in each orifice. The more anterior opening drained urine, while the posterior opening drained meconium.
Let me just summarize. I'm actually fascinated by the fact that you were able to make a prenatal diagnosis of hypospadias. Now a full-term baby is born, and what I'm seeing is a baby with no anal opening, but a pretty obvious dimple of where the anus ought to be. And then a pretty significant penoscrotal transposition and a severe hypospadias.
So basically a perineal fistula because of the meconium staining?
I think the main lesson here is this is not an easy, straightforward perineal fistula. The combination of these kinds of urologic defects, and I would include bladder extrophy, penoscrotal transposition, and severe hypospadias in that group, an anatomic change in that pelvic region associated with imperforate anus is commonly associated with a perineal fistula, interestingly. Jason, any additional thoughts on this combination?
I agree. I think just saying it's just a perineal fistula and you're going to book it for a 2-hour or 3-hour case is not going to be realistic in this situation.
Main question when you see such a baby in the newborn is whether a primary repair is appropriate or is a colostomy a safer move. And Paola, you want to just comment on your thought process relative to that decision?
He definitely needs a way out for pooping. And I realized that it would have been too hard and risky to go into a newborn baby by myself, without a pediatric urologist, such early time.
Ah, that's a wise decision. You choose first to deal with the anorectal malformation by creating a diverting colostomy because the connection between the rectum and the urinary tract was unclear. In order to not to create any additional problems, you break down the anatomy and deal with one section at a time.
I think I would also have diverted this patient in the newborn period and worried about this at a future time. It will make your rectal dissection easier. Although it is clear that you knew where the rectum was exiting. So it is a perineal fistula. It's not a rectourethral fistula. But I think your judgment was correct. Jason, would you have done a colostomy?
I think most people would have done a colostomy, including myself, without question. I think we need to discuss the order of the next steps after the colostomy, because I think it's interesting to discuss order of repair and reconstruction, both from the urinary side, genital side, and then from the colorectal side. So, Paolo, what did you do? Tell us about the colostomy creation and then the steps following.
Okay, so we decided to do it laparoscopically. And I did it with three trocars. It was a very cool and nice way of doing colostomy. You choose the exact point where you want to take out the sigmoid, emptied it outside the body. You empty the meconium and you put the two stomas separate. And there is no opening of the skin in between. So the stoma therapist just loved it because the bag attaches very nicely.
The other nice trick that recently came upon me was to irrigate the distal segment by passing a large Foley into the distal segment. I have done that irrigation with laparoscopy view. So I have looked in laparoscopically and put the tube in and washed the meconium once I've already delivered the bowel through the stoma site. And it was really cool because you can really see the distal segment decompress and you can confirm that you've removed all the meconium.
Great. Now you've irrigated the distal segment and created two separate stomas. The baby's eating well. The stoma functions properly. What are the next steps?
So we now have the chance to study the distal bowel. So we took a colostogram and we confirm our suspect that that tiny opening indeed is quite far away from the real bowel. And the distance is 2.5 centimeters from the three dots to the bulking column. And also the length of the urethra is almost 3 centimeters. So it's a long way to dissect from the fistula to the bowel opening.
Of note, the colostogram also showed a nice healthy rectal lumen below the pubococcygeal line, which then traverses anteriorly with a long thin fistula that exits the perineal skin exactly along the tract of the urethra.
Also, very nicely, you put some radio-opaque markers where I assume the muscle complex is located, at least by inspection, and seeing the distance that you're going to have to travel when doing the colorectal reconstruction.
We can also comment on the sacrum, which looks like a healthy, normally developed sacrum, which is not at all surprising given the fact that the rectum was so low, i.e. a perineal fistula.
Great. Now we have a better understanding of the anatomy. You've consulted with urology and now there's a plan for repair.
All right, so it's time to solve this baby's rectal problem and figure out what urology wants to do.
Okay, so my plan is this month, he will turn 5 months. I will operate with my colleagues from pediatric urology, and basically I will do a PSARP, and she will take care that I do not mess up her part. Because ideally, she would have done a 2 steps reconstructions more toward 1 year of age. So 5 months of age, she said it's quite early for them urologists. But for me to wait 1 year to repair the rectum is too much.
So The key technical question in such a case is how much anterior rectal wall do you need to mobilize?
Remember that a perineal fistula in most males is within the anterior most portion of the sphincteric ellipse.
And in those cases, we've talked about here doing a posterior rectal wall mobilization only and avoiding any anterior rectal wall dissection at all. No possibility of injuring the urethra in that case. However, that perineal dot can be anywhere along the anterior midline raphe, all the way up to the base of the scrotum, sometimes in the center of the scrotum, and in this case, even higher, just at the exit of the hypospadias.
Right. So in this case, we just leave this tiny fistula together with the urethra and starting posteriorly and grabbing the first structure that comes after dissection is the rectum, and just leave these 3 centimeters of 1 millimeter of diameter undissected, leave it close to the urethra and work on the bulging colon without starting from the perineal fistula and try to dissect in that. There is basically no wall between the urethra, the spongiosus, and the fistula.
It's that delicate balance of getting enough mobilization that your anastomosis is not under any tension, but less is more in this case, right? Because there's a lot of damage that can happen on that anterior dissection.
It's essentially a glorified cutback, so there's really no need to dissect the anterior rectal wall at all. It can be left alone. You basically just need to mobilize the posterior rectal wall to fill the space.
And then there's no posterior sagittal incision, right? Because you aren't doing an anaplasty, but rather the incision is the sphincter length. Dr. Levitt, for this case, would you do something similar?
I would just get the lip of anterior rectal wall mobilized and leave the fistula alone, leave it floating there as it attaches adjacent to the urethra, and let that be worried about later as the urethra gets dissected by the urologist at a future operation.
I wonder if potentially, depending on how difficult to repair, they could use that tissue for repair.
They might be able to use it. Obviously, it's mucosal line, but the important thing to remember is you, as the pediatric surgeon managing the rectum, you do not need to chase that fistula. But the anterior rectal wall needs to be adequately dissected so it's completely separated and up. And in this particular case, a healthy anterior edge of your anaplasty with no tension at all, so it doesn't pull back or retract.
But this is a pretty rare case. Most perineal fistulas do not require an anterior rectal wall dissection.
In a typical newborn perineal, if you can manage not having a posterior sagittal incision, usually the rectum is right there below the surface. The end of the case, you can have no incision anterior or posterior to the anaplasty.
Thank you. Let's get back to this case. So we have a rare perineal fistula with an anorectal malformation requiring anaplasty. Dr. Levitt, what would your approach be?
This case is going to need a posterior sagittal incision, probably fairly close to the level of the coccyx, to get a full mobilization of the rectum, but the patient's diverted. So I'm not as worried about that incision in that case.
So Mark, you're thinking posterior sagittal incision, reach the rectum, mobilize it, bring it down, separate it from the fistula. We're leaving the fistula behind, very different than almost anything else we've ever done.
That's right.
And save that for another day. And again, maybe that tissue might be needed because it's mucosally lined and potentially used for the hypospadias repair.
And yes, and I would do the same in the perineal fistula without hypospadias with a long fistula. Like you see these perineal fistulas that the little dot of meconium is at the base of the scrotum or even in the middle of the scrotum. There is no need to chase that long, narrow fistula. You can leave that alone. It will disappear.
Okay, so for this case, and really any perineal fistulas, you'd complete the anaplasty and leave the fistula to close on its own. It's also important to remember that you do not need to send this transitional tissue, which contains anal ischemic cells and urothelium cells to pathology, which is distinctly different from a Hirschsprung case where you are sending tissue to pathology to identify a transition zone.
Because pathologists will answer to you, no ganglia, and you got panic and then start asking around, and especially in low bulbar or perineal fistula, they are constipated likely. So you have in the back of your mind that it might be because no ganglia are there. And you start such a confusing pathway that ends up in a wrong decision.
Anyway, my major question is, Paola, you've done this great repair. You still have a colostomy. You still have a hypospadias. What are the next steps and when are you closing that stoma?
I will convince the urologist to do at least the first step repair with the colostomy in place. So between 6 to 9 months, which is a good compromise. They want 1 year. We want to close everything by 6 months, but at least the first step, which is the most complicated. And then probably closing colostomy, and 6 months after she will finish with her repair. But I have to convince her. That's why I want her to be in surgery since the beginning with me. So she's involved in all the thinking of this.
It's extremely important to have a good working relationship with your urology colleagues. As you can see, this takes a lot of careful planning. So today we discussed a very interesting case of an infant with perineal hypospadias and an erectile malformation. We walked you through diagnosis, testing, and surgical approach for repair. It's been an absolute pleasure to be here with you all today. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great episodes.
I just read this story in I think Time or Newsweek, where they were excavating and doing a dig in Italy, in Rome, looking at more ruins, and they discovered a fossilized dinosaur fart. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Wait, a fart from a dinosaur?
Yeah, fossilized. They said it's a blast from the past.